Okay, Senator Fisher, Vic, and Senator Sturgalowski and Senator Ziegler are present. The chairman is both indisposed and excused today. The record should reflect that now. One of the five bills we have on the agenda today is committee substitute for House Bill 376, an act amending the Limited Entry Act providing for landing permits. Apparently, some concern has been expressed about the bill. It is now removed from the calendar, and Senator Mulcahy and Senator Lyson, it's my understanding, want more time to review the bill, and they intend to take public testimony by means of a teleconference. Is that correct?
Right. We hope to have the bill before the committee of the whole by next month.
All right. Well, now, since the prime sponsors of the first two bills on my schedule are tied up elsewhere, let's take the two fisheries bills that are still before Senator Mulcahy. Senate Bill 379. Could you tell us all about the bill?
Mr. President, anybody should have a proposed committee substitute for Senate Bill 379. This bill is at the suggestion of the Governor's Task Force on Fisheries, is where the original suggested come from, and has the support of the administration, and at least a pretty good segment of the industry, both fishing and processing. What the bill does is allows for a tax credit for shore-based fishery that's entering into bottom fish up to 50% of their tax, that person's or that business's tax, to be used for the purchase of equipment that's going to be used primarily for bottom fish processing. Credit could be used against an expenditure that was made that year, so it wouldn't be a carry forward or carry back involvement. And the bill defines those fish that fall under bottom fish. Originally, we tried to use developing commercial species, but it was felt by the subcommittee that this definition is too broad. And under expenditures, it means those funds actually paid out. And the bill does have a repealer January 1st, 1989, so it does have a life of 5 years to help move the industry into the bottom fish, and it's obviously pretty much targeted to those that are in the crab fishery where there's nothing any longer. I'd be glad to answer any committee members' questions on it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator McKay, I appreciate the work on this bill. We've had some problems with investment tax credits, but I think you've done a good job here to identify just who would benefit. I think we can pretty well tell the amount of dollars that are going to be involved. We've got some pretty good records on the fisheries business tax that exists. I like the idea of the limitation both in time and on the carry forward and carry back, but I think I understand the intent of Section 2. I believe the intent is to protect the 50% or 25% to boroughs and cities. Does that work? Is that what the reason behind that is? So that if they look at the total, you'll still get all the 50% to the local communities, and this will all come from the state share. Is that correct?
This is basically correct, and it's for the individual out there. They in fact are liable for that tax, so it's a tax just like they're having to pay, and not in lieu of this tax. So they have to figure out what's due them before they can take the credit on it.
Okay, but does that mean, you know, right now boroughs are getting 50%?
No, that's addressed in the first paragraph.
Could you show me? Tell me where that is.
That's on line 12, page 1.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not clear on that, because you're talking about the individual. I'm talking about the shared revenue portion of it now. 50% to the muni, 50% to the state.
And if
we give this 50% up, I'm hoping that's the states and that we're not then impacting the communities.
Mr. Chairman, this is what the drafters, this is the drafters' directions, and this is what the drafters tell me that this do, that the shore base is entitled to a credit of not more than 50% of that person's tax liability. The other 50% then would flow, or could flow, it doesn't, the total 50%, but to the municipalities out there.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would like that question directly. This says the person's tax liability. Okay, that's okay. But it doesn't say in that section, at least to me, that that 50% that's remaining goes to the municipality. To me, it doesn't say that.
I'd have to go back to the
Record. Well, maybe we need to check with the drafter as it moves through.
In the absence of objection, I'll request that the bill be held over till Wednesday. Do you suppose if you and Senator Mulcahy and the drafter can get together between now and then, or would you like more time?
No, that you do.
Is there anybody in the audience who's here to testify on 379, the committee substitute, therefore? Yes, sir. Norman?
Maybe we have the answer.
No. Could be we do. Let the record reflect that Senator Fisher Vick is now here, Dan. Okay.
Chairman, my name is Norman Staten, and I'm a special assistant to Commissioner Heath in Revenue.
Conversation.
There is one provision of the bill that we have worked with Senator Mulcahy and his staff on, and that starts on page 2, line 1, with regarding expenditure. We are trying, in the language here that we've worked with Legislative Affairs, Mr. Mulcahy's office, trying to determine what qualifies for the expenditure, and this is a language that we came up with, but reaching the closest amount that we can get to it. However, we think it appropriate that we at least comment and say that we'll do to our best abilities to implement regulations to effectuate what is the intent of this, but we see it being very, very difficult. In that, I mean that usually when a processor will go out and purchase something, he will go out and one, let's say a $100,000 piece of equipment, pay $10,000 and borrow $90,000 from the bank, or two, buy a $100,000 piece of equipment from a seller, pay $10,000, and then the seller holds a note for the $100,000 piece of equipment that's financed. Under each of those scenarios, only the $10,000 money actually spent would be part of the tax credit. And that was the intent of Senator Mulcahy, and if we honor that, we would try our best by regulation to follow that, but what happens in reality is our understanding is when processors start commingling all their money, we really don't know if it came from a loan or where it really came from. It would be very difficult to limit that amount to actual cash money as opposed to money that he didn't borrow from someone.
Mr. Chairman, on this, I don't want it. We're all holding ground again, what we went over two or three times in the subcommittee. When I talk about cash, I'm talking in context with this, it's the actual down payment that was paid. Now this may be borrowed money, it may be money that they got from a mother-in-law. What we're talking about is that when they buy this X piece of equipment and they put 25% down and write out a check for it, That is what applies under this, not the other 75%. There's no strong feeling as far as the committee is whether they have that money in cash in their pocket or cash from the sales. We don't expect Revenue to trace this back, or they borrowed it from their mother-in-law, or they borrowed it from their banker in just everyday operations. That's no concern. But in the purchase of the equipment, that it was a down payment of money actually paid down from other, in other words, the original question, as I understood it from Revenue and as we went over it in the Fishery Committee, was that should you give them credit for the whole piece of equipment or just that there was a down payment made? It, decision that just that, that the down payment was made up, and not that they might be paying in, at some other period.
Right.
Or with the cash payment.
Yeah,
if they paid over the course of the year, down payment in three payments, that would count.
That's completely accurate, sir. I think that's all I was trying to say was, this is the language that we did work out to get to that end, and that we would try to draft regulations that would follow this as well, but we recognize that we may run into some problems in that area, which is why I just bring that to the attention of the committee.
I think you'd have the same problem with Sears and Roebuck Monkey Wars, or maybe the Ford Garage.
Mr. Staton, before you go, and before I ask for any questions from committee members, can you shed any light on the question that Senator Spirchulewski raised a few minutes ago? She can restate it if you want her to.
I heard Senator Spirchulewski, because our intent is the same as Senator Mulcahy's. Our understanding of it is that 50% we're talking about is only the funds that would be due to the state and not the money from the municipality and the revenue sharing. Under the revenue sharing of last year, I think it was $18 million under the business tax, of which $6 million went to the municipality. So it really didn't even balance out to the 50% due to the fact that some of those business tax funds were received from outside the municipality.
Oh, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
The intent's fine. I just don't see how this says it. I just want to be sure it does.
Then you still want to get together with Senator Mulcahy between now and next week. All right. We'll hold that and thank you. I'll be bringing it. Anybody from another country's bill? Senate Bill 391.
Mr. The chairman, there's also a proposed committee substitute. We had some slight modifications in it over the original bill by the subcommittee to this, and I think everybody's got it in the file. I can kind of walk through this.
If you would, sir.
Section 1 of this bill includes residents who live in group homes or like tuition or like institutions under the 25 cent fee that is currently enjoyed by those that are blind. And that's what section does. I might add that this bill is the governor's bill and introduced by the administration. Section 2 of this bill clarifies just what happens right now with military personnel, and clarifies that language in that they at this point in time have to pay a non-resident hunting fee, but they do this under this bill. Where they get a break is on the tags, on the different big game tags, and this makes that much clearer under Section 2. Section 3 of the bill makes some technical changes, and in addition to the technical changes that when you're filling out the applications for licensing, that you do so under the penalty of perjury rather than to swear that the information is correct. About Section 4 allows for doesn't make the bonding of agents mandatory and gives the discretion to the commissioner of revenue on this, and allows the commissioner to suspend or revoke the right to sell for agents that collect fees for the state. Section 5 of this bill includes commercial fishing crew member licensing under this particular statute dealing with the sales. Right now it just pertains to sport fishing, and this includes the commercial crewman's licensees into that statute. Section 6. Specifies that state employees that sell as one of their duties state licenses or tags, they aren't allowed to retain that portion that would go to the vendor, But if they're doing this not in connection with the job, they are allowed to. A situation with maybe Esther and I have a boat charter service down here, and she works for the state, or I'm in the legislature. If she worked for the state and the summon, and you know, the job was a state summon licenses, she obviously would retain the fee, but she could if she was down there working on the weekends as a partner in the business. Section.
Drawing mighty fine lines.
The administration is drawing all that. That was their proposal. Section 7, this is a new subsection that says that an agent who does not report and transmit fees forfeits that portion that he would normally retain and is subject to civil and criminal penalties. Section 8 is along the same line and makes the failure to report and transmit fees to the commissioner a violation of the statute and makes this a misdemeanor. Section 9 spells out this misdemeanor, and this is one of the changes that the committee made. It's just it's a Class B misdemeanor rather than running through the $1,000 in 6 months or more. Section 10 extends the present audit and subpoena powers of the department into the agents that are appointed to sell licenses to determine if the department is getting the tags and fees from them. Section 11 allows the department to put the fishery fees under this section of the bill. Allows them to get at real estate is what it really does, a personal property, as does with other fees, and clarifies that. Section 12 makes fees not transmitted by an agent a debt to the state, and together with the civil penalties that go with this. Section 13 also extends the department enforcement powers to that of imposing a lien on unpaid fees out there. Section 14 of the bill this section says that the lien imposed in Section 13 that rises out of the time of an assessment is made for the time that a fee is required to be paid and the amount to be transferred, a judgment against the person with liability is satisfied, so that they have to satisfy the lien before that judgment falls right into place.
Okay, thank you, good Senator. Are there any questions for Senator Mulcahy or Senator Elias, who is working on this bill? Senator Fisher.
Mr. Chairman, just a question about Section 1. What is meant to be, what is the purpose of the group home provision? 1AB, I mean 1B.
Pioneers have fallen under it, and that was the first one I had thought of, but they also get another exemption of, you know, a regular license, but I think it goes to any group homes, whether it would be mentally retarded groups or any group out there, state institution, home institution. And they did give us, Senator Fisher, an example or two, and quite frankly, off the top of my mind, I forget what those examples were.
API.
Do you remember?
No, I don't.
Mr. Chairman, it does seem awfully broad, and could include just about any, well, as you said, API, it could include women's shelters.
Everything but jails. The only thing
everything but jails.
Is prison facilities. Yeah, I say.
And I was just wondering why this was being done. But I.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Just along that line, I think somebody did a study on something, and there's 3,000 of them, I think, out there. And, you know, there's a whole lot of nonprofits, and it just seems awfully, awfully broad. I can see it for possibly elderly citizens that we might not catch under the other law, but this is extremely broad.
The the fishery subcommittee, what it addresses is a sport fishing license, so it's not a commercial venture. And the subcommittee had no problem with it, nor was there any problem raised with the idea of a sport fishing license be given to institutionalized people. And that's about all I can say.
Is there anybody here for the administration who wants to testify on this bill? Can we hear him before we... Yes, come ahead, sir.
My name is Martin Richard. I'm the Director of Public Services for the Department of Revenue. In answer to the question about Section 1, we've had several inquiries from the two that come to mind are Hope Cottage and the Alaskan Youth Village. The section was to allow them to take institutionalized persons on a little outing without a great cost to the home. These are for homes that provide regular care and services to people. So it's not just any nonprofit group that's involved.
I think Senator Sturzelewski's question is that what the bill really says, or is it much too sweeping in the language which is utilized? Have I paraphrased you correctly?
This chairman does have regular care and services to person residing there, but I suspect it's quite broad. There's a lot of people following.
We can't be hearing anybody except the Department of Revenue, and if Revenue says it's all right with them, then why should we worry?
And we have to raise income tax, Mr. Chairman. No, I mean...
We should have taken off the books in the first place.
You're right.
Well, let's put it back.
Yeah. Not today.
Do you have any questions, Senator Fisher? Are there any, Senator?
Thank you, Senator. This, you talk about broad, you know, affecting a large group of people. I have a question. The normal 25-cent license that we now have for hunting, trapping, and fishing. When we're talking in the bill here also about being able to put some teeth into the law, what kind of guarantee do we get now that a person applying for a 25-cent license is, say, poverty or under the income of $5,600. What do we get now, if anything? Because we're talking over 12,000 people per year that are getting the 25-cent license. That's a heck of a lot of people. And when I can get downtown, to be quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, right now and get a 25-cent license, all I got to do is say, yeah, I'm not making the income and away I go. What can we do to prevent it from being abused? Which I maintain is currently now being there. Is there anything that we can demand?
If we catch you, we can put you in the bucket and fine you.
Well, that's what I'm repeating. That was just what you do.
I think the state court was I feel it's kind of okay. You know more about it than I do. But go ahead, Mr. Richards. You can answer your question.
All right, Mr. Chairman. Presently, you. When you sign the license, you're attesting, so to speak, to the fact that you are under that income level. One of the things that this bill does is that you are attesting under penalty of perjury instead of taking an oath, which we have found is not given most of the time. We do not do a great deal in checking those licenses because of the cost involved with checking. Frankly, I think that's probably the only way to do it would be to require a federal tax return or something along that line to accompany the license. But presently, you sign it saying that you fit in that category, and we believe.
So that, Mr. Chairman, does satisfy my question, because there was a survey done, by the Department of Revenue several years ago. And they found that some of the people getting these 25-cent licenses are in the $20,000 a year bracket. And that would really bother me. Because we do have subsistence, but we need the subsistence license in there. To allow college students, just because they're college students, to get a 25-cent license, when after they buy it, they go and they spend $300-$400 on gear, is another thing that bothers me. And we even have, Mr. Chairman, some people who sell fishing licenses to students and sell them. 25 cents, because they know that person really isn't making under $5,600 a this satisfies my requirements. At least if somebody were to complain, then you would probably have to act on a complaint, correct?
And probably with some spot checking, isn't there, Mr. Richard? A little spot checking, a little random sampling.
Frankly, Mr. Chairman, I don't think there is at this time.
Well, of course, looking at it from a practical viewpoint, it's difficult for me to conceive that somebody would commit perjury for $9.75, which is what it boils down to. Is there anybody else to testify on this bill? Are there any further questions from committee members?
Madam, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask, came back to me as talking here, we did get a fiscal note, and we did discuss that a little bit, Senator Strigulewski, and it should be a part of the file.
It is not.
The department felt that the fiscal impact would be negligible, and didn't show a fiscal.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I'm not gonna object to the bill, but there are a whole lot of, and I have no fiscal note, but, you know, you go to Brother Francis Shelter in Anchorage, API, the Women's Shelters, Halfway Homes, Hope Cottage, Alaska Children's Services, there are a whole host of agencies that do, and, you know, some may need it because of some special conditions. The others, you know, the whole purpose of this is to get dollars in a sense to, help manage our resources, and so I guess I disagree that there's no impact. I think there is, and I think people will take it advantage, and then it becomes a policy issue.
Mr. Chairman? Sure. I would like to suggest informally at this point that we hold a bill for Tuesday and
Wednesday,
and that Section 1B be reviewed, and maybe the language tightened up to achieve the specific objectives that the agency has in mind without opening the door to all sorts of potential.
I have no objection, Senator. I don't think anybody else does. So this little beauty, too, will be held over until Wednesday for the purposes, perhaps, of tightening up the language in subsection B of Section 1.
Could we request the department to review this with the Department of Fish and Game and others and bring back either a statement that this is the language and why, or an alternative language?
If I could suggest something, perhaps making it an option of the commissioner whether to allow the license for the group home or not would be a way to provide a review at the time that they do request it.
There's no problem. Mr. Richard, would you get in touch with staff and Senator Fahrenkamp at Fahrenkamp's office and try and get us back to proposed language if that is the consensus for our Wednesday meeting? Are there any further questions?
Just that it would be my preference that it wasn't a preference of the commissioner. I'd rather have it spelled out. Who got it or didn't get it? Rather than the commissioner, so it's going to have to make judgment something else. So, you know, the tightening of the language, I don't object to, but I would have some problems with this. So I want to get that on the table now.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'd like to call upon your lawyering knowledge. And what is distraint?
I wish you wouldn't do that.
Would you tell me what distraint is? I assume it's a... and Senator McKay is over there.
I looked it up.
He looked it up and he wants to share.
If I'm wrong, Mr. Chairman, it means seizure.
Right. Seizure.
Going after.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, well, that disposes of 391 for today, unless somebody else wants to be heard on that particular bill. So it will be held over. Senator, have you got your adequate notes to reflect what we're not doing so far today? Hopefully, by a mutual agreement, Senator Fisher-Vick, 376 pertaining to limited entry has likewise been taken off today's calendar. So now we're back to Senator Fick's bill, which is 399, and then we'll get to your resolution. Okay. Sandra from Senator Lake's office, or Sandra from Senator Fahrenkamp's office?
I would just be happy to point out the changes.
Come on over and tell us about it. The changes are very few, I know.
Right. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Sandra Schubert. I'm staff to the Resources Committee. Senate Bill 399 was heard by the committee in mid-March, and as originally written, the bill would have required that no trespassing signs be posted every 500 feet along the exterior boundaries of property. And there were concerns at the time that this would be extremely difficult to comply with in rural areas.
Large landowners, this is a bummer, okay, so what we've done now is we've changed it to posting signs wherever there's access.
Right, and you're not required to post, so if you choose to post, it should be where there are access routes, and the posting notices would have to contain your name and address, in other words, a way for somebody who's interested in getting permission to cross your land to obtain.
In the proposed committee substitute, Senator, I think it was inadvertent that you left out the words "no hunting," which were in the original bill. And it seems to me that no hunting is at least as important as no digging.
Okay.
So if you substitute, put back in no hunting among those other things, would you?
Okay.
Do you suppose we could do something with this bill in the absence of Senator, even in Senator Fake's absence?
I'm not sure it does very much.
Senator Brown.
I don't know what I'd like to do with it, but... Let's go back to that prior hearing we had. As I understand it, the problem wasn't coming from the landowners. The problem was coming from somebody who might be out hiking and all of a sudden found themselves on somebody's private land.
Well, you're absolutely right that we only partially addressed the problem or the original intent, which was to make it easy for people who are out in open spaces to find out if they were on private land, and if so, who the owner was, and this does not completely address that.
But if it is optional, there's nothing they can't do now. This bill says they can do if we pass it, right?
That's right. The only...
So we're not doing anything, right?
It's an earth
shaker,
Senator.
Just requiring that posted notices would contain certain information. It couldn't just say no hunting, but it would have the property owner's name and address and a contact.
If you wanted to post it.
If you wanted to post it.
That's a biggie. I don't like no trespassing signs. You know,
I'm sure that people aren't lined up to testify. If I'm wrong, correct me. Well, it's a pleasure. I frankly don't give a damn myself.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I keep thinking of that poor cow that used to be on our 40 acres that the hunters we always worried about would take after. And I'm not sure this bill would protect my cow if I still had one.
Would it protect your lungs?
I don't want to appear to be negative against the bill. It has one. It has one redeeming factor. Sponsored by Senator Fakes.
Well, maybe before you tinker with it anymore, let me find out, is there a due pass on the committee?
I'm a no Rick.
In connection with this particular bill? I'm going to poll the committee. What are you, Senator?
No Rick.
No Rick.
No Rick.
Should be pleased. Okay. The unanimous opinion of the committee is going to be no recommendation of the committee substitutes. All right, we have one more that I'm sure we can get more enthusiastic about. And that's Senate Concurrent Resolution number 44. And my apologies for the witnesses. We're going to let the prime sponsor, Senator Fisher, tell us all about the resolution and why it's a good idea.
Mr. Chairman, this resolution resulted from several years of discussion and correspondence initiated by Senator Curtula, who asked me to look into the problem that the state is increasingly having of finding road and other building materials, particularly gravel, sand and gravel, for construction. And his concern, and mine also, about the fact that we are disposing of lands where there are gravel deposits and sand deposits, and then we get into a situation where we have to build roads to provide access to those lands, and we have no sand or gravel unless we buy the materials from the people to whom we gave the land in the first place. That's just one part of it. The other part is that we simply don't know where the sand and gravel deposits are. And so we started correspondence with the, well, as you can see it from the attached letter, it was first addressed to John Katz, and then it was addressed to Esther Wanicki. And anyway, Ross Schaff and some of his people and some of us got together, and this resolution is the result. The purpose is to initiate a survey of the material sites that would lead eventually to the state reserving sites for the future, and this is important for road construction, future railroad expansion, and almost anything else the state is going to do, and we have some truly expert testimony, and I would defer to the experts for further backup.
Alrighty. Who's the head of the visiting delegation?
By rank of least knowledge, I suppose. The department supports the proposed resolution. My name is Ned Farquhar from the Department of Natural Resources. The department supports the proposed resolution, although we have not allocated funding in our proposed fiscal year 85 budget for such a project. Probably the most valuable thing that this proposed inventory project can do is make sure for the future that in our land management today, we aren't closing out our options for construction materials. I know our land management and planning will be much more valuable if we have this kind of information at our disposal. Exactly. Russ Schaff is Director of the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys.
I take it you favor the resolution.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Ross Schaff. I'm the director of the State Geological Survey. I'd make one very brief comment about the authority of the survey. We are charged under statute AS-41 to provide information across a broad spectrum of natural resources, oil and gas, coal, minerals. All of the materials that the Department of Natural Resources are responsible for. And one of the specific materials that the legislature placed in our statute in 1972 was construction materials. So that is the reason that the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys is here today, because this is an inventory function within the Department of Natural Resources goal of the state. I would make one last comment, and that is I think that this resolution does something for our ongoing inventory programs with respect to construction materials, and that is it provides a very good focus for us to be doing the inventory. With me today is Dr. Randall Updike, who is the Chief of the Engineering Geology Section of the State Geological Survey, who has some comments to make about what the program might look like.
Thank you, sir.
You sort of have this orchestrated. You know, we've seen it.
I apologize to you for, pinch hitting, as it were, and coming in at the last possible moment, but we have some other bills that were introduced by members of this committee, and they naturally take top priority. So go ahead, sir, you have the floor.
Thank you. My name is Randy Updike. I'm the Chief of Engineering Geology Section of the State Geological Survey. The issue before you is quite complex. On the outset, it looks pretty simple just to go out and locate where sand and gravel is, and I think this is one of the problems that we've had for decades with this particular resource, is that it is something that the normal attitude is that we can just go out to any hill and dig it up and find sand and gravel. The problem is that as the infrastructure of the state develops, this going out and digging up a hill becomes more and more difficult, and the needs, the volumes that are involved become greater and greater. The value that's placed on that particular resource increases. For example, in 1982, $91 million was involved in the sand and gravel industry. In 1983, it was up to $120 million. That's a 32% increase. statewide. One other statistic is the Alaska Railroad, which is of some interest. Between 1982 and 1983, there was a 59% increase in the amount of sand and gravel hauled by the railroad. This is one of their primary sources of operating profit. Specifically, what would be intended to be executed under this resolution would be very, very straightforward. Where is the state-owned sand and gravel? How much is there, and how much is it worth? It's almost precisely the same approach that's taken for oil and gas. Only we're looking at a surface material that's it's a little bit easier to see, but a little bit more difficult to handle because there are many, many people wanting to manage it, both state, private, and federal. I would suggest that in the first year, FY85, that the process would establish an inventory methodology. We would identify the critical areas in the state where inventory needs to be done most quickly and in most detail. And then in the second and third year, the inventory of these areas would be executed. This wouldn't be a panacea for the whole state. At these levels of funding, we will be able to execute study in the critical areas, but to do a statewide inventory, it's going to have to be open-ended.
Jim, just curious about how you go about it. Do you actually have to go out and drill? I mean, do you have that much base mapping done? You really don't.
No. What we would generate for public documents would be inch-to-the-mile quadrangle maps, again, in the critical areas. For example, the Matsu Anchorage Corridor. And I would go on and list some others, but I think we need to get into it and find out what the critical ones are. But we would generate inch-to-mile quadrangles. It would essentially be a red, yellow, and green type format. Green are the good areas for sand and gravel, a reconnaissance level, yellow maybe, and red no good. So there may be quadrangles that are all green, or there may be quadrangles that are all red. But there would be a state overlay on the state land overlay so that users would know on state lands where the green areas were, so to speak. But the question of drilling, one site could expend $200,000.
Just a quick question. You're talking state.
Yes.
Do you make any effort to find from the feds, say, land that they might know is a good gravel source, and also known private sources so that in the catalog if you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
I've talked to my staff about this and how we would deal with this question. We have to be careful that we don't become consultants to private interest groups. On the other hand, if we end up with a quadrangle that's all red as far as state land, we need to also provide the information for alternatives for that region.
Any further questions from committee members? What's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Fisher?
I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that we report SCR 44 with individual recommendations.
Yes, the objection, that's exactly what we'll do. I think that covers our agenda for the day. So, Mr. Sturgeon, ladies and gentlemen, we thank you one and all. Let the record reflect that we knocked it off at about 10 minutes of 4 on April 9th.
Congratulations, Mr.
I've never done it before. Very effective.
If I haven't asked a question,